Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview is brought to you in part by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
It's Friday, January 10th, 2020, as I speak. But, of course, it's a podcast, so who knows when you're listening to this. It could be the year 2525, as I like to say, one of Dennis's favorite songs. As we always do on the bonus segment of the Ben Jarofsky Show, I ask my distinguished guest to introduce him or herself. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
I'm Mark Brown, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
That's correct.
Thank you, Robert Mueller. The Mark Brown in the studio. Mark Brown may be one of the few people in the city of Chicago, even remotely as old as I am. So he remembers a few things. He's been covering. How long have you been writing for my beloved Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times?
82.
82. Good God. 1982 was the year after I moved to Chicago. Oh,
1982. I was like, 82 years? I'm just kidding.
No, he's not that old. Come on, man.
I actually was the intern for the Sun-Times in 1978 in Springfield, but it would be stretching it to.
No, say it. You're stretching his resume.
Yeah, I go. So I go back to a time before Mike Madigan was Speaker of the Illinois House.
For 10 trivia points, who was the Speaker of the Illinois House before Michael Joseph Madigan?
Bill Redmond.
Very good. What a geek. Wait a minute now. I'm doing this totally off the top of my head. It was a guy named Charles Wheeler, as my memory serves correct. Was the Sun-Times Springfield correspondent? Do I have that right?
Well, actually, we had like a couple of guys. The bureau chief was really a guy named G. Robert Hillman. Mm. And then the number two guy was Charlie Wheeler. And the year that I started with the Sun-Times, or the year that I was the intern, was the year the Daily News folded. And we even had Bob Sector move over from the Daily News and join our bureau very briefly before he got sick of us and went to join the LA Times.
So how did you get that gig? Were you just a college kid in those days?
Yeah, yes, it was an internship. I went to what in those days was called Sangamon State. Now it's the University of Illinois Springfield. There's a program called the Public Affairs Reporting Program, and you get an internship in what then was the flourishing Springfield bureaus of numerous news organizations. Now the program has having a lot of difficulties because nobody has full-time reporters in Springfield anymore, and so nobody to teach the kids the ropes.
No, I don't know. You were on the show before. I don't know if I did this. So a little bit of biographical stuff. You've been working for the Sun-Times, as you said, since 1982. So you've been around Chicago a long time, but you are not a native of Chicago.
I am not. I'm a hillbilly.
Okay.
I'm a hick from Washington, Illinois.
Washington, right. Put that R in there.
It's a little town outside Peoria now.
So did you grow up as a Republican or a Democrat, or you had no politics?
I think my parents were Democrats. My father became more conservative in his older age, but, we were Kennedy Democrats, I'd say. And, I think at one point my father probably supported George Wallace, so I got to overcome that, but,
Is that right?
He was a good man, but 60, my father was.
Yeah, not Wallace, let's clarify. In 68 or 72, do you remember?
I don't remember.
So were there political tabletop conversations at dinner time? Was that the kind of family you had, or did you, it was just
not a lot. Not a lot, no. No. No, most of my politics would be, just, I think my dad might have worked for Kennedy a little bit. You know, he was a railroad guy. I grew up in a railroad family. But you know, that assassination thing took a lot of people out of that stuff. And then, Nixon and all, people got disaffected.
So what drove your interest into politics? What motivated you to want to have a career covering politics?
Well, I have an interest. I think I have a sense of it. You know, I'm just a longtime newspaper reader, right? You pick up things. And when I was, I went to Northern Illinois University and got involved in covering some politics there, and it seemed like a good path for me. It was after the point where I realized that I shouldn't be a sports writer my whole life, right?
You started as a sports writer? I didn't know this.
Sure. Didn't you? We all did back in the day, it seemed like, you know?
I did not start as a sports writer. I'm obsessed with sports, have been obsessed with sports my entire life, Mark Brown. And then even before politics. No, they were roughly at the same time. I got the obsession with politics. I get the obsession with sports. And so they were sort of intertwined. One affects the other. Because back when I was a kid, there was a lot. Sports was very political, at least for someone like me. Sports was very political. The few times I wrote about athletes, I found them so obnoxious. I did a story about Tony Kukoc, who used to play for the Chicago Bulls. He was one of the most obnoxious people I ever met. And it's just utter indifference to me, bordering on hostility. Really passive-aggressive behavior, Mark. So I just said, no, I actually feel bad. We have Joe Colley on the show from time to time. He's the Bulls beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. I think he does an excellent job. And I feel bad for sports writers who have to, like, squeeze some information out of the athletes they cover who are completely indifferent to them. On the point of hostility, so
I started as a sports writer when I was 14 for my local newspaper. So by the time I got to college, I'd already been doing it quite a while, and someone prevailed upon me that there were more serious things a person could do with their life than follow around the jocks, and you know, I'm glad they. Made that clear to me.
Well, there's nothing more serious in this town than covering the Chicago Bears. That's the most serious and important thing in the world. I mean, each newspaper dedicates, I don't know how, countless pages to the Chicago Bears. Why they do that, I do not know. I'm just speaking to the people who run the newspapers. The Bears are terrible. All right, they don't warrant their coverage. All right, let's get back to political discussions. You wrote a column that ran at the end of the year, and all of this is sort of acts as a lead-up or introduction to it. You wrote it off. You dismiss it as something you just did at the end of the year filler. But I thought it was a pretty interesting, just the headline alone, from Blago to Fast Eddie to Ed Burke. It was like a rogues gallery, political wheelers and dealers in the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Mark, I've watched all of these three in action. Blago, Burke, Verdoliak, the power they yield, how far they got. It's really extraordinary, I think, in some way, that the voters elected these three. I don't think any of them did anything to warrant the support and power that they garnished down through the years, is my opinion. But let's break it down a little bit. Let's take them one by one. Talk a little bit about Fast Eddie Verdoliak, the alderman of the 10th Ward, who was at full power when, in 1982, when you were a rookie reporter here at the Sun-Times.
Well, I always thought Verdoliak was the most charismatic political figure I've ever seen in this town. I mean, he was like, it was like having Sinatra at City Hall. And, he had his own rat pack, and, he was... Harold Washington hadn't come along, God only knows where he was headed. He was Fast Eddie because he always had at cooking up deals. It's funny. We you and I talk about him now. People, I'm sure, half the people don't know what we're talking about. But this guy was something. People followed him. He was a great leader, and he knew the political game. He didn't have a real ethical base, you know, and he was in it to make money, and there was never any bones about that, and he's made a lot of money, but he skated all those years until finally in the Blagojevich scandal, he sort of got sideways dinged because of his association with Stu Levine, who was, you know, another crook who had insinuated himself into the Blagojevich world and had done enough crooked deals through the years that, in his effort to get the feds to go easy on him, was able to spread the pain in Eddie's direction over kind of a very obscure real estate deal up on the north side there. So, I've got in my home, in my den, I have this huge photo of Eddie Verdoliak and with some of his, Howie Carroll and Sam Panayotovich and all this. It's a photo that one of our guys took many years ago, and it's almost like I idolize the guy. I don't. It's like the opposite, but I'm so fascinated by him. He was cool, wasn't he?
Well, okay.
All right. You're thinking it differently.
I look at it differently with Eddie. I know exactly what you're saying, and I remember doing a story in 84 when he challenged, good God, the stuff I know, when John Stroger. Okay, let me back up for our millennial listeners. Eddie Verdoliak was an alderman from the 10th Ward in the far southeast side of the city of Chicago. He was also the chairman of the Democratic Party. He became chairman as he led an insurrection against George Dunn. This is about roughly the time, Mark Brown, that you moved to the city of Chicago and became a reporter, a Cub reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. And at that meeting, follow me in this, Mark, at that meeting, I'm doing this off from memory, Niall Sherman, who's the committeeman, the Democratic committee from the 21st Ward, got up and said, everybody in the Democratic Party, black and white, together for Eddie Verdoliak. He's going to lead us to the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You remember that?
I don't remember the quote.
And it was like, what a terrible quote. That's not the kind of thing you want to accentuate. But you're right. He had that hold. And they all believed in him because he was so smooth, so slick. He dressed really well. His hair was perfect. You're right. He moved fast. It was like rat-a-tat-tat-tat, like Frank Sinatra. And I remember when his fatal mistake, Mark, in my humble opinion, was instead of accommodating the voters who elected Harold Washington in the Democratic primary to be their nominee, he resisted Harold. And he became Harold's foil, and he led the uprising in the city council known as Council Wars. He led the 29, and instead of being a hero to Chicago, all black Chicago and white Chicago, liberal Chicago, conservative Chicago, he became a hero to one element of Chicago and the enemy to the other. And so my point is that he threw it all away. He made a bad bet. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I always say that I never thought he made... Yes. Yes, that was probably a tactical mistake. But I think that what killed him was when then he decided to become a Republican.
Double
and
down.
That's what... Yeah. Then he had no credibility left. Because, I think he thought that he believed in himself a little bit too much. I think he thought that he could make the people move over to the Republican Party, but they didn't. And so he's left over there like a schmuck, really, And he just moved into the background and was still manipulating all, you know, everything from who got to be judges in this town to probably what those judges were deciding. The reason he's in trouble here is that he somehow insinuated himself into the giant tobacco settlement, where the cigarette manufacturers, you know, ponied up these huge sums of money to governments to make all the lawsuits go away. And somehow he got a piece of the settlement, even though he did nothing. But he did something. He somehow fixed something. We just don't even know what it is to this day, right? But in the course of that, fascinating guy. He'd gone all that time without getting jammed, and here he's been jammed twice in the decade here.
Yeah.
So
and he's largely forgotten. You're right. Harold Washington has a library named after him. Harold Washington has a city college named after him. Richard J. Daley has a city college named after him. Jane Byrne, the former mayor, has a portion of an expressway named after him. Eddie Verdoyak, despite being larger than life for several years and being a very powerful person, and hasn't... Now, nothing will ever be named after Eddie Verdoyak.
Oh, the law firm. And I hear their ads every day on the radio. And, they must still be making a lot of good money.
His sons are
there's
all,
there's still a lot of people in this town that go, oh, yeah, I'm going to hire the Verdoyak law firm because they can fix it for me.
So Chicago, that mentality. You're absolutely correct. Hire it. I don't even think he has any. His kids run the law firm now, I think. But you're right. I sit corrected. His law firm is named for him. No public buildings, but his law firm is named for him. And it's probably more profitable having a law firm named for you, Mark Brown, than having a public building named you. That's fast. Eddie Verdoyak, the other name on this list, of course, is Blago. Everybody knows Blago. Rod Blagojevich, our former governor, is now sitting in a federal penitentiary in Colorado for his various crimes. What's your sense of Blago's legacy?
His legacy? I'm no fan. I think he's where he belongs. If I were the judge, he wouldn't have to be there, stay there quite as long as he's going to have to stay there, unless Trump comes through with the pardon, which I don't discount still that that's a possibility. You know, the longer he stays, the less I worry about that one way or the other, you know. What I don't like is when Trump tries to pretend that he didn't do anything wrong, because I believe he did. I don't know where you are on that, but, you know, the guy, he was, he actually came up in the Verdoyak world, strangely enough.
He did.
He's from that town, from that part of the town. And, he's just another amoral guy. Mm-hmm. And there were some things he did that were probably good as governor. I think they all do some good things. George Ryan did some good things. But I thought that the prosecution of him was on the mark.
Did you cover that?
Yes, yeah, I covered quite a bit of it. I wasn't there every day, but both of them, both trials. I mean, that's what was sort of amazing to me as I did this year, a decade in review, was at the beginning of the decade, we were still waiting for him to go on trial the first time.
Blago.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had Ryan in prison and Blago soon to join him, but, you know, it took two trials to get him there. Mm-hmm. And here we are at the end of the decade. He's still in the news. I just think the guy will dominate the news as long as he's alive. You know, and they'll be talking about him years afterwards, whether it was fair or not, whether it was right.
Well, Blago, there's some parallels between Blago and Eddie Brdoliak. Both are charismatic figures. Both move fast. Both talk fast. Blago is from the northwest side. Eddie Brdoliak is from the southeast side. But first time I became aware of Blagojevich, he was working for Eddie Brdoliak when Brdoliak ran for mayor in 1987. He was, when I say working, I mean he was a volunteer in the campaign, or he was affiliated with the campaign. And then, of course, Blagojevich married into the Mel political family from the northwest side, and Daddy Mel ushered him through, got him slated for state rep and then Congress, et cetera, and so forth. So really helped his political career. And you asked what I stand on it. I feel as though he should have been convicted, but the 14 years was outrageous. He should have been let out a long time ago. Blagojevich's problem, I'll throw this out to you, Mark, in the state of Illinois, he was Trump before Trump. He showed utter contempt for the whole proceeding that was against him. He showed disdain for the prosecutors, the judge, the charges against him, much the way Trump does now with the impeachment that comes against him. Trump just yesterday gave a speech in Ohio where he mocked Nancy Pelosi, said she's not playing with a full deck, mocked Adam Schiff, called him, what, he's skinny neck or some pencil neck or something like that. He mocked the notion that he has to abide by congressional subpoenas. He mocks the notion that he has to tell Congress of his intentions to want to assassinate the top general in Iran. He just acts with contempt. That's how Blagojevich acted. The difference is that Blagojevich didn't have the support of roughly 40% of the population of Illinois, which is the equivalent of what Donald Trump has, 45% or so in the United States. So there was nobody to support Blagojevich. People just got mad at Blagojevich. And
I don't know. I think Blagojevich was a much more conventional politician
than Trump.
It's nobody like Trump. Okay, even now Blagojevich wants to be like Trump. He's sort of just trying to say what things that he thinks would attract Trump's attention. I don't know. He was different though. He was not. He wasn't afraid of fighting with everybody. That's true. He had his own ideas of how to do things. But I don't know.
I thought
he was a weak stick.
I'm thinking about Blagojevich after he was indicted. That's the Blagojevich I'm thinking. Who, like, for instance, went on the David Letterman show to deride the prosecutors, went on Geraldo's show. Even as he was being sent to the federal pen, he was giving interviews as he went to the federal penitentiary. And in that way, he reminds me of Trump.
Yeah, that's true.
That's where I'm getting at. And you're right. Blagojevich is counting on Donald Trump. Now, I think I may have said this to you before. I don't know. But one thing that was useful where Donald Trump, his occasional crusading for Blagojevich has been useful for the Democrats, ironically, is that in the 2018 election for governor, Bruce Rauner was getting set to run a campaign that castigated J.B. Pritzker as being a crony of Blagojevich based on tapings of conversations that Blagojevich and Pritzker had that were the Tribune reported on and put out in the public's eye. And that was going to be a key part of Rauner's assault on Pritzker. And lo and behold, Donald Trump, the leader of the Republican Party, starts saying, I feel that Blagojevich was the victim of the same kind of mistreatment that I've been victimized by. In other words, completely undercut the very argument that Pritzker was going to make. And I think that hurt, Rauner. So, ironically, Donald Trump benefited J.B. Pritzker in that moment.
I don't remember the timing. Is that, are you, I don't remember those things going on at the same time, but.
Yeah, no, okay. It was, okay, I was utterly obsessed with it at the time. Yeah, because I was like, Every time that Donald Trump would talk about, just issue a suggestion, a hint that he might commute the sentence of Blagojevich, that infuriated politicians in Illinois, particularly the Romer campaign. It was like, wait, this is the guy we're going to... Donald Trump, you're saying... I don't know, a mixed message. Blago is the second person, Fast Eddie Blago, and then, of course, Ed Burke. Ed Burke's role in Chicago politics, the corruption of the political culture of corruption in Illinois. Talk about Ed Burke.
Well, it's interesting, of course, that, you know, back in the period that we were talking about when Ed Verdoliak was flying high, his teammate... it was Eddie Burke. You know, in fact, they called him Fast Eddie and Slow Eddie. And, you know, as we've learned over the years, Slow Eddie may have been moved more slowly, but he was, you know, he knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And all this time we all have thought that he was this corrupt figure with the lawyer with the tax appeal business, using his position to steer clients his way. But I always thought he'd figured out some way to do it within the lines. And and here now, he's under indictment finally at an age when I think a lot of us had given up on thinking it would happen because of Danny Solis wearing the wire on him and him making some incriminating remarks got him, got his phones wired up on top of that. So, Burke, a different kind of guy than Ed Verdoliak, a guy who managed to stay in the game. He also was totally against Harold Washington, but he managed to stay strong by just staying in his lane. Again, a guy who, controlled the naming of judges, which is a big power, a source of power, not only with the court system, but with the other politicians, because you name their people judges. He also, I'm sure, would pay people... referral fees. That was at least an old Verdoliak trip. I don't know that we've actually proven that Burke did that.
What does that mean, paying people referral fees?
Well, if you're a lawyer, you can pay referral fees if you send somebody a client, right? So that was certainly a way that I believe that Verdoliak...
You get paid referral fees if you send somebody a client.
Yeah, you
okay,
can...
Okay, got
you
it.
Can, yeah, so... If, say, an alderman would send you a case, somebody comes into your office and says, I've got this problem, and you can see that that's something that you could make money off of, you'd send it to Verdoliak, and then he'd pay a referral fee, and therefore you liked Ed Verdoliak because he gave you money, which is, seems to be what he holds a lot of people in line in politics, right? Making money.
And did Burke play that game as well?
Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
I have questions.
I always thought that the game Burke played was this one where he was at like the right place. Just think about this at City Hall. Where every contract and every TIF deal and every budget came through his finance committee. So he was a key point person in just the flow of legislation.
And he worked hard at it.
Yeah.
And he kept careful tabs the way old man Daley did. I believe he even used index cards like Daley did. So he would know if he did you a little favor. And, you know, he would call that favor back in. I mean, you can see that in the what little we've seen of the from the Solis stuff, where he was, manipulating the fact that you had to come before his committee,
mm-hmm.
or the fact that you had to go before zoning, and you know that Solis controlled it. So if you were doing something for Solis, then they could theoretically work in cahoots. So, and he's got a lot of blue chip clients out there, right? And seemed to have no limits on, he wanted it all, right? What was it? Is it a Burger King? Yeah,
Burger King.
It's a Burger King franchise, mm-hmm. But he didn't just want. He just didn't want the guy's business for that burger. He wanted all of the business for the area, right? Mm-hmm. He spotted that. This is a guy who could make me some real money. So
yeah, and again, that's what I'm saying. He used his position at the heart of operations in the city of Chicago, overseeing, like we said, budgets and billions of dollars worth of expenditure, used that position as a way of squeezing people into hiring him as their property tax lawyer, as you're talking about with the Burger King operator.
Well, I believe this, I'm not 100% sure in this, but I think this is an example that would ring close true to you, is that there are these TIF hearings, and he will go to all of the hearings. He's the only guy that'll go. Why is he there? Because he's gonna get FaceTime with somebody who needs something from the city, and there's money to be made there. He's kind of tireless that way.
Yes, he was tireless. He's in his 70s now. He's still playing the game. He'd probably still be playing the game. And if the word hadn't broke that Danny Solis was wearing a wire, and all of a sudden he went from the Honorable Ed Burke. He was the Honorable Ed Burke, Mark Brown, to somebody that nobody wants anything to do with. He's like the kiss of death politically in this town. Tony Preckwinkle got clobbered in the last mayoral election to Lori Lightfoot to a large degree because Lori Lightfoot successfully linked her to Ed Burke. She could say it's unfair that Tony really wasn't an ally of Ed Burke. Tough luck, Chicago politics.
So maybe that's a good way for us to segue into why is Kim Fox not giving that money back? I don't get that. I don't understand. Just give it back.
Yeah.
You don't need it. Give it back. She should have given it back a long time ago.
Before we get to Kim Fox, which is a favorite topic on this show, let's just sort of summarize this history. Do you think, when I think about Blagojevich, Fast Eddie, Ed Burke, I remember when Blagojevich was impeached. And the jubilation in some circles, a lot of Democrats were just relieved to get rid of him. Republicans despised him, so they were happy to get rid of him. Plus, it made the Democrats look bad. Pat Quinn, the successor, was sworn in. I don't know if you remember this. I'm probably the only guy who does. Ann Burke swore him in. She's a Supreme Court justice and happens to be married to Ed Burke. And so it was reviewed as reform, a triumph of reform in Illinois. I was very dubious about that, Mark. Maybe I've just been around Chicago too long and very skeptical guy by nature. I did not believe reform was ushered in by the impeachment of Rod Blagojevich. I don't believe reform was ushered in by the conviction of Ed Radoliak. And I don't even believe that reform has been ushered in by Ed Burke's decline in power. He's not even the head of the finance chair anymore. He's fighting for his life and with this federal case against him. Am I being too cynical?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wish I could disagree with you.
Okay.
You know, I do. I have had the sense over my career that things are getting better. But as I sat down and wrote this decade in review, it was hard to see that. I see better people in this getting elected here and there. You know, better aldermen, I believe, as a rule, better state legislators. Generally, I just see younger, you know, smart young people. I think. You know, and the people that are in the bureaucracy, I think, are better than the hacks that there used to be, but it's just so easy for them all to get corrupted by the way it all works, and you look at this, and what now everybody always looks at, okay, if we can just get rid of Madigan, okay, and you know, okay, that's a, I'm on board with that, but I don't think it'd necessarily make much difference. I don't, what would the next, you know, and again, I'm the only guy that predates Madigan being the speaker, although he was the majority leader at the time, so he really was calling the shots then, too.
For the Democrats, anyway. I was calling the shots for the Democrats. I guess you share my skepticism. Well, of course, we're a couple of old goats who've been around the same amount of time. You mentioned Madigan. Let's just close with that. You have been one of the many journalists in town who've been following this ongoing corruption investigation, which seems to be the next big thing. I've been waiting for the ultimate story to break on it. It's taking its time. And that has to do with representatives, various elected officials from the southwest suburbs, from the southwest side of Chicago, Commonwealth Edison, the head of the City Club. Danny Mahopoulos was in here talking about that. We had a lot of fun with the City Club gate angle to all this. I'm not quite sure where they're going with this investigation, Mark, that's been going on now for I don't know how many months. What's your sense of like what ultimately is the destination with this investigation? Is it Michael Madigan, or what's your sense of that?
Well, I think it's going in a lot of different directions, you know. I think they came across different pieces as they started drilling down. And then, you know, there one, you know, the safe speed red light cameras, there's a scandal there that scoops up a bunch of these guys, a lot of these suburban mayors. There's this Commonwealth Edison ghost lobbying business that is, you know, it seems to revolve around this former state rep, Mike McClain, who, you know, is a close confidant of Madigan, and most people view that as, you know, the possible way to get to Madigan. But what exactly they've got, you know, it's been all played pretty close to the vest, and we don't really know. Kerry Austin was raided last summer. We still think that is an active investigation. I mean, they're taking out some big players, right? A lot of people don't know how important Kerry Austin is, but she had a lot of power there at City Hall for a long time. And she has not been charged with anything, but, you know, we still expect she will be, I think. And there's this investigation of this little bank in Bridgeport, Washington Mutual, I forget the name sometimes, and that has some potential, we believe, to, you know, go in some other directions that, you know. So, you know, if you add it all up and it all comes to fruition, it would blow a huge hole in the power structure of this city. But, you know, who steps in to fill it? And would the same corrupting influences then go to work on them? I'd say yes, probably. But hope springs eternal.
I think I've discovered the only person in the city of Chicago even more cynical than I am, more jaded and skeptical. Here we are. We get rid of all the rogues. And what do we replace with? More rogues. Because the system is corrupt. I'm going to try to end this on a little more of a positive, though. How about that?
Help me do that.
Okay, I'm really struggling. Oh, you're asking me to do this. You said, I took notes on this, the kids we have now, that they're better aldermen, better state reps. I'm not quite sure what you meant by better. One thing I find as I get older, I don't know if this happens with you, like you'll have this... a new alderman who got elected as a reformer or progressive coming up to me telling me how much influence I've had on his or her life. I've been reading you forever, which is kind of a way of saying you're old or whatever. Or maybe they're just being polite. I don't know if they do that to you. So I'm like, oh, so follow me, Mark. When I first got to town and started writing, most of the aldermen had wanted nothing. Most of the aldermen today want nothing to do with me. So the notion that there's a young reformer in there who like claims to have read articles I read calling for reform or change or dividing up the pie more fairly leads me to have a little more hope and optimism. And so I would like to think that they learned the lessons. You were one of the authors of Clout Cafe, which was the story that blew the whistle on the corruption in Millennial Park restaurants. And
it was not, but okay. The Sun-Times was, sorry.
I believe your name was on that as a byline. Okay. There was like 20 names.
All right.
That's a personal story for me, Mark. I have my reasons for remembering that, but we could discuss that.
I just don't want to overclaim, that's all.
No, you're one of, like, there were so many reporters on that story.
I know.
And yours was one of them. I'll bet you lunch at that Waffle House down the street on Madison that your name was under. Anyway, the point is that, like, these are all contributions that people have made down through the years to exposing the culture of corruption in the city of Chicago. And there's a whole new generation of representatives who claim that they were influenced in a positive way by these articles. So in that general sense, I try to be optimistic, but you're so right.
Yeah, my optimism comes from seeing people that, that the historic way that the system, that Chicago politics works is people are in it to make money. You know, that's, and I see people that aren't, they want to do that job. They want to help people. They want to push a philosophy. You know, it wasn't that there was political philosophy was not what Chicago politics was about, right? Really. And now there's more of that.
Yeah.
And I may not agree with all of them, but I think they're taking us in a better direction.
Better a political philosophy than just where's mine.
There you go.
All right. We ended this conversation on a positive note. Two old jaded journalists are going to end on a positive note. Thank you very much, Mark Brown from the Chicago Sun-Times, for stopping in. I'm Ben Jarofsky. It's another Ben Jarofsky Bonus Show. Take care, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.